Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Juke, joined to the special podcast hosted by myself, Jacob Widmer, as well as my good friend, Aaron New.
Who is sitting here behind his computer. I realized just now, actually, that when we were trying a new, I'm trying out a new recording service, because we've been using Google Hangouts and YouTube and stuff to podcast, which if anybody else has listened to the old episodes, they know that the quality is just terrible at times.
We've reached our limit at Google Hangouts. As nice and easy as it was to record that way, I think for people, for audiophiles like us who get obsessive with how everything sounds, we were getting pretty frustrated with the inconsistent levels of our different mics and everything.
Yeah, so, and plus this whole podcast thing, at least to me, is an experiment to try to figure out things. So we'll tweak it as we go along, but I think we might be finally in a place where we can get quality audio and,
here's open.
Figured out. Yeah. So yeah, if this episode sounds better, then you know why. We're trying a new service and everything is going pretty clean. But I just noticed that I did all this work to set up my computer, my laptop to use the webcam, and then this service, I can't use the webcam. So
yeah, it's one of those things. Well, I mean, they haven't been seeing the webcam anyway, unless we were doing a video on demand version of the podcast. Really, the video aspect of it was not doing much of anything. So yeah. I just liked it because it gave me a chance to see your beautiful face.
Well, I guess you could just stare at a picture instead.
I can stare at the WAV files here of your voice. I can do that.
I got this I got this framed photo on my desk over here to my side. It's just like a picture of the band and I at down in Thurman. We played our last acoustic set back in July or something like that. So sometimes when I'm doing like recording stuff, I'll sit and like stare at that photo and pretend I'm talking to people. Like I know I'm not directly talking to them. I'll be like, just, you know, had to have a face to talk to kind of make it a little more conversational. But maybe I'll do that with you.
Which should we mention, I think last episode we kind of teased at the end that we were going to be talking to a bunch of people this episode. And unfortunately, scheduling conflicts have come up. We're not doing that today. So this is going to be the show of us constantly teasing you with things that you won't get to hear, but that's fine for me.
I wish we could have brought everyone on to talk about that tour, but I mean, I guess it'll take more than like a week in advance to kind of get them all lined up, because there's what, 10 people involved, 9 people involved in that whole thing.
Well, there's 10 people involved, and it looks to me we've changed up for a little behind the scenes here for the audience. We've changed up the way and the time we record these now. We used to do these at 12 o'clock noon Eastern, 9 in the morning Pacific, and now we've had to bump the time up a bit because I am now in class and I cannot work at 12 noon anymore. I will be in a different location, which is not the studio I use all the time. So it's one of those things where we have to adjust our schedules, and I think it landed in a poor place that when I am finished with my day, everyone else was getting ready for work. So
yeah. Okay, so how was your week so far? Because I haven't talked to you much since last week. So tell me, how's your week been?
It's been pretty exhausting. Now I'm in class, so there's a new attitude of, or not attitude, there's a new ingredient in my life, which is a steady workflow. I've been trying to keep up to date with all the tapes for my other show, The Gaming Weekend, which I have down for. There's the way The Gaming Weekend works is that I have two like mini series in between the big show, which is one for Saturday and one for Sunday. Now, the Saturday one, I'm fine with. I have enough tapes to last me till the end of April for that. So that is fine. But the Sunday show has been kind of giving me some hassle. I haven't been getting a lot of time to really record enough episodes to have a sizable backlog to which I feel comfortable in how much I have to just edit. Because editing I can do in like maybe 1 or 2 hours an episode. And it's something that's very easy for me to do. And I haven't really been able to get the amount of tapes for the Sunday show that I'm as to the point where I'm comfortable with how many I have without it potentially intruding on my college work, of which, unfortunately, for the head of the label that I work for, I must remind him that for me at this current moment, the college thing will be coming first. Rather than the nice, fun side project that I enjoy and is fun, but is not providing me with any potential for paycheck, which is something that I am now much more wary of. I'm looking for a sustainable living, and as much as I enjoy the fun of YouTube, it is not paying my bills. So,
yeah, unfortunately, that's just a hard field to get into. But one thing I noticed, especially after college, is it's difficult to find a sustainable living. I think it's actually a conversation I've had with a lot of people recently, just kind of in passing. Is that a word? I don't know.
We'll make it a word for this show. Webster, we're calling you up, man.
All right. So in passing, having these conversations with people, Jesus, telling me like I graduated college because they ask how I've been and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, you know, I graduated and I'm out west, you know, working at a warehouse. And like, oh, don't worry, like things get better. Like I had like a waiter's job for the first like 3 years after college, and now I'm like running my own business. And it's like, oh, okay. And then a lot of similar stories to that, and you know, things didn't really pick up until they were closer to 30. So it's a little rough after college, but it seems like things are slowly picking up. I think you start to learn how to navigate the things around you, and it gets a little bit easier.
I think the thing on my end is going to be looking for the opportunity and knowing when it hits. I've got a supposed connection with WVDE, which for those of you who don't know is the rock station in Pittsburgh. They have a bit of a reputation. They used to broadcast live concerts in the 70s. And there's a couple of actually pretty good, decent bootlegs from pretty well-known artists that are just like copies of Pittsburgh radio broadcasts. But apparently there's someone there who is like, hey, I got an in for you if you want it. I'm like, well, let me finish the college thing first. And then
that would be a cool gig.
But then the trick would be then I would have like – I would have a record label wanting me to stay here to make content regularly. And I don't live my life by their expectation, but I don't really need them breathing down my neck either. So.
Yeah. Well, especially, I don't know. I'd love to work at DVE. Cause I worked with a guy who worked there. And as far as I know, they have a huge, huge audience. I mean, it's like, it's one of the biggest radio stations in the country.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's what I mean. I mean, if it's well enough that there's like, If it's well known enough that there's like well known bootlegs of like Genesis live in the 70s being broadcast on WVDE, like, you know, it's like, okay, this is a good one.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
This has got a reputation to it.
Plus the Pittsburgh radio market, like you get into one station in Pittsburgh, and especially like probably the biggest station in Pittsburgh. I mean, the opportunities there to start to go nuts, I feel, because I mean, I had some cool opportunities while working in Morgantown, which is, you know, close to Pittsburgh, but not exactly in that market. And just the stories I've heard of people working up in the city is just, I mean, a lot of cool things can happen out of it, because there's a lot of, in terms of music, there's a lot of stuff that comes through Pittsburgh and a lot of cool opportunities with concerts and interviews and that sort of thing. So,
oh, yeah. Well, so I think too,
that works out.
I think too, I'm lucky in that I have a bit of a portfolio of work that I've done so far in the radio field and in the video field and everything.
Yeah.
Because I do have archived tapes of me doing some of the radio stuff.
Yeah.
And I also do it on my own for fun anyway as well. So,
yeah.
I think it'll all work out.
Yeah.
What about
you? Because I forgot real quick. You are graduating summer or the spring?
I will be graduating officially in May.
Okay.
I can do the walk across in April if I wish, though I highly doubt I will, because why would I do that if they have nothing to hand me?
Yeah.
And but I will not officially graduate until like the end of June, I want to say.
Okay.
And so at that point then I will be a free man, and then hopefully, I don't know, one of my many connections can maybe hook me up with something.
Mm-hmm.
But here's hoping. I don't know. It's a way away. What about you, Aaron? How's your week been?
It's been super awesome so far. Usual work week, which was, I mean, work is work. I realized this week, and I realized nobody else has seen me since I moved out here, and I was like, a lot bigger, but I've dropped probably 20 pounds since I moved out here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so like I noticed.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very nice.
I noticed that recently, and it's weird because my diet has barely changed. Like I'm still eating a bunch of junk and stuff like that, but I guess the nature of my job is I'm doing so much movement and labor and stuff, I just end up having to burn those calories. So yeah, so like I saw a photo of myself from back in like June or something like that when I was up in Michigan, and I'm like, wow, like I can't believe like how different I look. So That was a big part of my week, which is exciting. The weather here has been super nice in terms of temperature. It's been closer to 50 this week.
Now you have the upper hand on me.
Why is it freezing there?
Oh, it's quite cold. There's snow on the ground and everything.
Well, I heard a radio report. I was listening to NPR this morning, and they were talking about, I think from Colorado to the Atlantic, there's a big storm warning. And I'm like, jeez. Supposed to dump like...
So you just lucked out your little tiny corner.
Yeah, over here,
in the west.
Out to the west of the Rockies. We're golden out here. Yeah, I mean, right now, it's actually for the first time today, there's a little bit of sunshine coming through, which is nice. And then tomorrow, the weather's supposed to be nice. I think we're going to do a hike. Of course, you got the Cascades out to like the east of the city, so we're gonna go out there and do some hiking.
It must be nice to be able to just like say that. And I think today we're gonna go on a hike.
It's weird because honestly, I could say the exact same thing back home. Like if I'm living in like Elkins, Morgantown's a bit rough, unless you want to travel like an hour or so up to Pennsylvania or out towards like Maryland and stuff. But if I'm in Elkins, I guess it's about an hour from there too, and I'm traveling. I don't know. Time-wise, it's exactly the same, and there are a lot of hiking opportunities in West Virginia. I think just living there for so long, I grew up there, and this is the first time I've lived out of state officially. You don't realize how many opportunities there are to do the same thing. So I could also be working at a place in Morgantown and say, okay, maybe this Saturday I'll go for a hike and then drive up to like Ohio Pile and go for a hike. Just out here, I don't know if it's because it's a new place. It's just kind of the culture out here. I mean, there's a lot of outdoorsy people out here. So I guess there's that encouragement too of community.
It's just that kind of invigorating feeling.
You can still go out in nature and have like that solitary, alone time if you want it. But there's such a community here of just people who want to go out and experience something that's not the city. Because there's a lot of city here. But within, an hour, 2 hours, you can be, far, far away from it and kind of in your own place. And I think a lot of people appreciate that here more than back home because, in West Virginia, you could still be in the city, but within 5 minutes, you're out in the woods again because there's not much of a city base there, compared to what there is out here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's been my week so far. And that's probably what I'm going to do for the rest of it is just go walk around a lot.
You see anything while you walk around?
No. Well, maybe some trees, but it depends on where I'm at. So today's been mostly, I wanted to go out and do some like some photo stuff just for fun. But I spent the morning working on my car and doing laundry and stuff. So it was fine for the most part. I had a problem, and the beauty of YouTube teaches you how to fix things nowadays. I know you don't have to pay to be a
mechanic. Everything.
There's probably videos for that, honestly, if you just look hard enough. But,
how to fix your
but so I turn on like the heater in my car this morning and I notice like it starts rattling and I'm thinking, oh great, there's something busted. Like this car is new, but the warranty's expired because I've already put so many miles on it. This thing is busted somewhere. And I'm like, great. So I'm doing some research and my dad's not a mechanic, but he's pretty car savvy because he's worked on cars his whole life, just his own. And so I get some advice from him and I start like getting in, like behind my glove box, I'm taking pieces out and I realize like the fan that blows air through my car has a bunch of debris in it. So I cleaned that out and that was like,
oh geez.
Technically it would have been like a 10 minute fix, but it took me forever to figure it out. So I was out there for like 2 hours, like crawling around my car at weird angles, unscrewing things, cleaning things out, it was, I made it look much more complex than it really was, but I finally got it fixed instead of having to drop, $170 on a part. I could just, spend 10 minutes and fix it myself. So it was nice. Yeah.
Well, there you go. So changing topics, changing gears, you would say. The good thing about a show like The Juke Joint is that we like to talk about all sorts of pop culture that's relevant to right now. I would say one of the big things that has been sweeping pop culture over the past couple of months has been Spider-Man.
Oh yeah, which I actually saw last night, so this is good.
Well, let's specify. So there's been a lot of Spider-Man merch this past year. We've seen Spider-Man in Infinity War. Mm-hmm. We've seen Spider-Man in the PS4 game.
Oh yeah.
And the most recent example is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the animated movie from Sony Pictures Animation. And I've seen it a couple weeks ago, and you saw it last night, did you say?
I did, yeah. Went to a theater down this little town.
Mic, but
what's that?
I said to me off mic because you didn't say it in the podcast.
Oh, no. No, but yeah, I went down to the, well, one of my girlfriend's, one of her coworkers had a birthday and she wanted to go to the movies. So we went down to this little town nearby and they have their own little theater and we watched it. And it was honestly, I left the movie and I wanted to turn around and buy a ticket and watch it again. That's how much I liked it.
I thought it was pleasant.
It was, I don't know. I could talk about the good things for hours about, I mean, just that movie, what's your take on it? How did you feel about it?
I liked it enough. I thought, I actually have talked about this a little bit in my other show, but I don't think the tape of that is coming out till like March. So I'll talk about it here. I thought on a stylistic and presentational level, it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I thought the characters were great. I really would like to see more of Spider-Gwen. just in all things.
I had that exact same thought too. Like of all the spider characters in this, Spider-Gwen was my favorite.
Well, I think that in retrospect, I think that's half to do with the design, half to do with Hailee Steinfeld's fantastic performance of it.
Yeah.
But I thought that it was very, very well animated, very, very well drawn and animated and everything. Very well acted. Did not like the story. I thought the story was a bit too typical and predictable. But beyond that, I thought that it was a solid, solid presentational experience. I thought that as an experiment in what you can do with the character and what you can do also with animation, I thought that it was a masterwork. So I think it's worth seeing on that level. It's a bit like Kubo and the Two Strings in that sense for me, where the animation and the characters are so good that it kind of balances out a very stock, generic plot and script.
Yeah, I noticed that too. One of the things with the whole movie was that the plot seemed, I didn't want to say entirely predictable. You could see definitely elements that were like, yeah, okay, I've seen this plenty of times before. But for a superhero movie and I guess for the story itself, it's not really anything distracting. I don't know. It's not as bad as I thought, at least looking at it in retrospect. Definitely the animation and the characters and that sort of development was just absolutely beautiful. I mean,
its sense of humor was really nice too.
Yeah, well, of course you got that. I mean, the Spider-Man sense of humor anyways. There's a lot of like puns and stuff in there. But I think also if you're relating it back to the story and stuff, I think just the character of Spider-Man himself or herself or whoever, Peter Porker in that case, you know, whoever is Spider-Man in this sense.
Spider-Ham.
Spider-Ham. I was hoping it'd be Spider-Pig. See, like,
that's the Simpsons.
But I guess Spider-Pig's not canon, so.
But Spider-Ham is.
But in terms of just the Spider-Man universe and the character of Spider-Man and that, yeah, just that personality that Spider-Man usually has. Relating that to the actual plot itself, the fact the plot had some elements that were, they seemed a bit stock and generic and weren't really too fancy, I think were, give me 1 second, I need to think about this.
Okay, so then let me butt in with a point then while you contemplate yours. So this is actually something I talked about on the other show I did with my friend John, and we were both talking about the film. And a point I made, which is not a big revelation, but it is something to keep in mind when you think about Spider-Man, is that if the top three superheroes are Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man, I think what's fascinating is that whereas on DC's end you have Superman and Batman who kind of represent ideals, or rather Batman representing the dark and Superman representing the ideal light, you know, like what we believe a superhero is. What makes Spider-Man so interesting is that Spider-Man is the superhero that we are all supposed to relate to. He is the most real, ironically enough, for someone who was bit by radioactive spider and has spider abilities, it's the most realistic, like, the most identifiable of all of the different superheroes, because Spider-Man goes through real world problems. He has relationships. He has a job. He gets married. He starts families. He does all these things and is very much of a part of the populace. So I think what Into the Spider-Verse does so greatly is that it exemplifies the fact that really anyone could be Spider-Man. It's not about just Peter Parker. It's about anyone who possesses the want and ability to do great things and to help others in such a way that they create a positive impact on the world. That is the representation of what Spider-Man can be. And I think that's what Into the Spider-Verse exemplifies better than probably any Spider-Man property to date, yeah, I would say.
Definitely.
So I think that's what its grand success is. But I would say as a standalone plot, it's still it's very much the hero learning how to be the hero in every sports movie Karate Kid way you've seen done before.
Take a minute, because this kind of pops in my head while you're talking. The Stan Lee cameo in this case, because of course it's a Marvel film, so you got to have Stan Lee in there in some aspect.
Yes, well, and he's been Stanley's been he's gonna be in the next couple of films. I think he's already filmed the cameo he was doing in the next Avengers movie, and I'm certain he's gonna be in Captain Marvel. So they'd already kind of preemptively filmed cameos for him for the next couple of Marvel products. I think Infinity War will Avengers 4 will most likely be the last one he does. But I thought that his appearance in this film was very, very poignant, very nice.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the most. Well, first of all, it was very. They were very direct in saying that was him, which I thought was interesting. Usually it's like a cameo where he's playing like a shopkeeper, or no, I guess in this case he is a shopkeeper, but
where he's in the Spider-Man video game as a pizza guy.
Yeah,
he's a waiter in a restaurant, and he sees Mary Jane and Peter, and he goes, "Love seeing you two together again." I'm like, "Yeah," because everyone likes seeing them together again when they aren't being broken up by Satan. Yeah. Like, but it's very nice to see the main character is together in a relationship,
especially given the fact he passed away probably, I guess, a couple months ago at this point. And the way they kind of place that in the film, you know, I don't want to give away any spoilers for the movie, but just kind of this downer part to the film and his placement in that kind of, I think, made it a little more emotional, which was, I thought it was a nice touch.
They couldn't have planned it like that. At least I don't think they could have planned it like that. Maybe they were planning in so much as they knew that a very old man was doing cameos. But like the thing with animation is that his lines are probably recorded like a year ago and probably animated even like, you know, a while. Like it was probably a while between creation of the film and death of the great legend, but it still seemed like a very poignant way of him being there.
But so. But transitioning here, because I could talk, like I said, I could talk about this movie forever, but I don't want to give away any plot points and any spoilers and stuff. What I would say though is, anyone listening, stop what you're doing after this episode and then go out and watch the movie as soon as you can, because I think it's definitely worth your time.
What would you rate it out of 10? What's out of 10 rating for this film?
I think in my heart I want to give it a 10 because I'm just a huge fan of Spider-Man, but I think if I'm looking at it subjectively, I'd give it like a solid 7.5.
I would give it
maybe an 8.
I would give it a 6, I would say.
Yeah.
I would say it's very nice. It's a lot of dressing for something underneath, which is very okay. But I think the dressing, I think, is what makes it so good, you know.
Well, I think that's one thing I got the vibe from this movie, and I guess just the things I've heard about leading up to it, which I can't recall off the top of my head, but it's given me the vibe that they took a lot of risk and there's a lot of experimentation with this film, because I mean, especially with the animation style and you know, just throwing all these characters together and into this really insane plot, I think was a big risk. And I think while it wasn't flawless, I do think it was an absolutely wonderful attempt at trying to piece together this universe.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Very nice.
Okay.
All right.
So transition.
So let me ask you this. Do you think Into the Spider-Verse is going to be nominated for any Academy Awards?
I'm not too sure. I'm looking at the list here right now because I can't remember exactly what was nominated for what or who was nominated for what or who won at this point. I guess the awards already happened.
Well, I mean, the Academy Awards didn't already happen, but that's going to be...
I was thinking the Golden Globes, but...
The Golden Globes, yeah. I don't know if it did anything at the Golden Globes. I didn't watch, which leads into what is the point of this next topic, which is that award season is upon us.
That's true.
We've got the Academy Awards at the end of February, and do they have a new host yet, or are they still searching?
Last I heard, there was still it's still an open tag because Kevin Hart was booted for various reasons, and
for very specific reasons. Well, it wasn't, true. But
yeah, I still think it's an open spot. So
are they? Okay. I just, now bear in mind, I'm looking at this on Wikipedia, mm-hmm. so I don't know if this is truthful or not. But it's been reported on 2 days ago by Variety that the Academy is planning on just holding the ceremony without any host.
Interesting.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
I think that can either be really good or really bad, because in one sense it means it cuts out all the fat, mm-hmm. all the sketches and things. We just like cut away, focus on just giving the awards out.
Yeah.
Which is honestly fine in my book. But at the same time, it kind of takes the fun out of the evening and actually will draw more attention to it when everyone in that theater and watching at home is sitting there thinking, I wonder why there's no host. Oh, yes, because of that.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would like lead to bigger it would make people think about it a lot more if they go hostless, yeah. I think, than if they just replaced Kevin Hart.
Yeah, definitely.
But we'll see what happens. I don't think they want to use Kimmel anymore because he's bungled it a lot.
I'm looking here, it's kind of back on the Spider-Man thing. Apparently with the Golden Globes, Spider-Man won Best Animated Feature.
Which is fine. I would say that's a fair thing.
Yeah, I guess what was it up against? I'm seeing winners, but I can't find any nominees. I guess
you can't find the nominees. Yeah. Really? Well, let's see.
I guess I can go to the actual website. Start doing. That'd probably help out. I'm just looking at like random articles and stuff too. So.
Oh, okay. Let's see here.
Load more. Okay, this is.
Well, the best animated feature film. It was up against Incredibles 2, Isle of Dogs, Mirai, and Wreck-It Ralph 2. Ralph Breaks the Internet. Actually, now that I'm looking at this, can I just say, I think Isle of Dogs should have won. If it's coming up between Spider-Verse and Isle of Dogs, I have to give it to the piece of art rather than the piece of pop.
You know, I can't really say much because I haven't seen any of these. I just realized.
I saw Isle of Dogs, and that was greatly mm-hmm. animated and was very original of a story. I mean, it's Wes Anderson, man. Come on. Like, that's... It had a Yoko Ono cameo in it, and it was awesome.
Have you seen... how does it compare to Fantastic Mr. Fox, if you've seen that?
I have seen Fantastic Mr. Fox. It's hard to compare.
Are they both good in their own right, or is it?
They're both good in their own right. That's the thing with Wes Anderson. I don't think I've really seen a Wes Anderson movie that I dislike. I mean, they're all aesthetic anyway. I mean, that's the first thing that comes up to mind with Wes Anderson.
Is there Owen Wilson cameo anywhere?
Oh, I don't know. There might be. I don't think he's in this one. But here's the thing with Isle of Dogs. I mean, I can understand why it wasn't an immediate success, because the thing that happened, so like all the humans, it takes place like off the mm-hmm. coast of Japan. So all the humans, bar one person, like speak mm-hmm. Japanese or a version of Japanese, to my understanding. And it's the dogs who are speaking English. And they didn't subtitle the Japanese actors. And I think that's actually mm-hmm. to its detriment to some degree. Even though I get the artistic decision of you're trying to heighten the language disconnect barrier. But at the same time, I don't know. Spider-Verse was like, I liked it on a presentational level, but like Isle of Dogs had more. It's like, I don't know. That gets into a whole debate about judging something between artistic merit and, I don't know. They both have their own artistic merits, but I think one... If I came down to it, I'd like something that was completely original rather than something that's based off of already existing.
Well, and
properties.
I think that could be an argument made against just any of these big award shows in general, because I could use the same logic with the Grammys, that it's just popular.
The Grammys, popular the freaking Grammys.
Instead of just like based on actual talent and art and merits, you know?
When's the next Grammys coming out here? Let's see here. So the Golden Globes have passed us by, and... We now have the Academy Awards happening at the end of February.
And I'm pretty sure the Grammys are coming up here and probably.
Yeah, I'm looking to see what it is. The Grammys are going
February
to be
10th,
February 10th. The nominees 10th. Are already out. So that's, yeah, I knew the nominees are already out. So they're next month. They're like in 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, last year was awful. I mean, just like, really? They gave the best. The record of the year went to Bruno Mars. I didn't even know he had an album out. Like every other one of these records, like I didn't like the Lord album at all. Like the Lord album was awful. I thought it was too try hard. 444, I thought was Jay-Z kind of resting on his laurels personally. And I didn't listen to the Childish Gambino album at all, but I knew it existed. I knew it had Redbone on it. And Damn was my favorite album of 2017. So like I knew what I wanted to win, and it went to Bruno Mars. And you know why I went to Bruno Mars? Because it was freaking safe.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, there's all these other albums, which whether or not, depending on whatever their merits are, they're doing something that's definitely uniquely theirs. Bruno Mars's record, for one thing, came out at the end of 2016 anyway. So for a Grammy Awards talking about the best of 2017, that's a bit ridiculous. But it's all him just channeling 80s soul music. Here's something to get all the nostalgia pumping for people who missed the 80s, and we'll give it album of the year because we can easily go, huh, this reminds us of the 80s. They're so out of step.
Well, and I look at the nominees this year for especially like record of the year. I mean, you're, what's it, one, two, three? There's quite a few.
Let's see.
You got Cardi B,
who I couldn't even stand. I mean, I'm sorry. Like Rolling Stone gave her album last year like number one on their albums of the year list. I couldn't finish it. I tried listening and I was like, this just fills me with such negativity. I can't finish this album.
There are Cardi B songs that, you know, that I will listen to in passing. You know, I don't really seek out to listen to her, but I mean, I don't know. It just, there's an appeal to it that I'm missing. Cause
I just don't know. I think it's so fake. It's like, she's a reality star and she's abrasive, but then that's the whole tone of the hip hop genre right now anyway, is people being abrasive. So what's being offered to me that I can't be offered by five other MCs? And there's nothing there. It's all hype.
Yeah.
It's insane.
That's why I say I looked at the nominees here for Record of the Year, and in my heart, I wanted to go to Childish Gambino because This Is America is just
I think it will go to This Is America. Here's the thing. I think the top three contenders are going to be either This Is America because of its symbolism.
Yeah.
God's Plan because it's Drake.
Yeah.
And he's like the big thing right now. And or it will go to Shallow by Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, and purely because it was in A Star Is Born.
Oh, see, I would argue that I would definitely put This Is America on the list. I consider Kendrick Lamar as well, just because Kendrick's such a big name.
I don't even know that song came out. I don't know what that's off of.
I'm not sure what it's from either, but I do know it's somewhere out there.
Oh, it's from Black Panther.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. That album came and went. I was like,
But I think if I were to guess what it's going to go to, I'm going to guess it's for Post Malone or Cardi B, just because, especially
I'd lean towards Post Malone Grammys
because
are...
I think of all the people on the list, even with like Kendrick and Drake and some of those other artists. I mean, you're talking breakout artists. And part of me feels like Post Malone would sweep that up as like the
Grammys
award winner, you know?
Yeah, but that's the thing. The Grammys never go with trendy. If they went with trendy, then you would see like different people winning these awards. They're very, very safe. Like they always have been safe. There's a great clip that is on YouTube of John Lennon and Paul Simon at the 1975 Grammy Awards handing out the award for Record of the Year. And the contenders are Elton John, like with Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. And then I think it was like Maria Muldaur with Midnight at the Oasis. Like a bunch of talented people, not even all of their best work, but like a bunch of talented people. I went to Olivia Newton-John.
Huh.
Like for some song that like no one's ever heard of.
Interesting.
Think on this. In 1992, do you know who won Best New Artist in 1992? In the year that gave us like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and... Dr. Dre and Tribe Called Quest and all these people. You want to know who won it? Mark Cohn for Walking in Memphis.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have to think the Grammys really have no clue what they're doing. The Beatles didn't win Grammy Awards. Well, do you know that? The Beatles won one Grammy Award in their entire history, and that was for Sgt. Pepper, and then another one for Best Soundtrack Album for Let It Be. And beyond that, that was it.
One of my professors at WVU, he did music engineering and stuff, and he worked on a record that was nominated a couple years back, or maybe it was last year, for Best Classical Recording or something like that. But anyways, he got some insight on like the whole Grammys process and just the Academy or whatever it is, the group that hosts it and then casts the votes and stuff is, to me, at least from the way he was talking, it's a money game. Whoever has the most money, you know, you have the most influence, and whoever you cast that money towards tends to be the winner. So I don't know.
I just never know. It seems to me like the Grammys are just like this strange group. Like the voting committee is like this old group of white zombies who represent a like era in the music business of record executives whose time has passed. Mm-hmm. Like that seems to me to be the way it runs.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like, I don't know. Is there like literally, I think the only time it like really represents what the audience is like the People's Choice Awards, mm-hmm. I think. And beyond that, like, I don't know. I mean, I honestly, I don't even get the concept of the award show anyway. I think it's nice to recognize when something has done a good job, but then like all art is subjective.
Yeah, well, I think a few decades ago there was some merit to these award shows, but nowadays anybody has a platform, anybody can win real. I mean, there's so many awards out there that you can win and just like different honors and stuff you can receive. At this point, you're looking at like the Grammys and the Oscars and all these big name award shows, and they're really just money grabs, it feels like. I mean, it's a chance for networks to sell ad space. It's just a chance for media execs to throw names out there to generate more profit.
Well, it's a chance for all these like corporations and all these executives in the film studios and in the television studios and in the record labels to just pat themselves on the back and go, aren't we doing such a wonderful job with our promotions and la-di-da-di-da. And then maybe one artist who's put in all the effort to make the work that they've done, they get their little golden trophy and they go, congratulations, we're still going to try to screw you over later on down the line financially, but you have this neat little trophy because you made us enough profits at the end of the year. You know, that's the whole like game of these award shows. I mean, the only award show I watch is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, honestly. And I think because the way that show works is that it's, for one thing, it's music based, which is a sale in my book anyway. But especially now, it's like a collection of musicians and critics. And then they like choose the list of the nominees. And then it goes to the public and the public chooses who gets in. Sometimes there's some behind the scenes gerrymandering that gets people in who ought not be in. But still, it's the one award show that I think is really an entertaining thing to watch. Plus, then you get to see all these like classic bands sometimes reunite and perform for the first time in ages. You know, I think you had like Cream reuniting there. You had the Talking Heads reunited at that show for when they won. Like all these different groups and like people get to perform and do their thing, and it's always really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever looked at that or?
Not too much. I mean, just not always something I'd pay much attention to in the first place.
I know Radiohead's being inducted this year into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Tom
York has already said he's not coming. So.
I paid a little attention when Nirvana was inducted a little bit. Like a guy.
They reunited to a degree.
Yeah, of sorts. Yeah, I mean, I watched that video so much.
But I'm performing with Joan Jett and Saint Vincent.
These did you look at the rock category? That's probably the only category I genuinely would care about with the Grammys.
I don't care about the rock category in the Grammys because I don't think it really goes to the best of rock anyway. But I mean, I did look at it and I was like, okay, so let's see here. Best rock performance.
Arctic
Monkeys.
Please,
Chris Cornell.
Please give all the awards to Greta Van Fleet so I can give up.
I will hurt people if they win. Greta Van Fleet is a Zeppelin cover band. That's all they are.
They're good at it. I'll give them
and
that.
And here's the thing. No, and here's the thing. They will win, too. They will win because the Grammys will be like, it sounds like Led Zeppelin, so let's give it to them because we know Led Zeppelin is good. Mm-hmm. But, like, the rest of it, like, I don't know. Maybe they'll give Best Rock Performance to Chris Cornell because he's dead. So then they might do it, like, as a posthumous, like, oh, yes, we awarded it to them. But I swear to God, if Greta Van Fleet win that award, I'm going to be so, like, okay, you people don't know what you're doing.
I think of all the people on the list, I want to see it go to the Fever 333 because I like the people in that band from the bands they were in before. So, but that's...
Yeah, I don't know. Best rock album. We got Alice in Chains, Fall Out Boy, Ghost, Greta Van Fleet, and Weezer, who are like all, I mean, aside from Greta Van Fleet, I think, like, they're all established acts. There's like, yeah. I don't know. Ghost, they're Swedish. Ghost is Swedish, and they were formed in like 06, so maybe they're new, but I haven't heard their album at all.
That album is actually, of all the ones on the list here, I think that one's probably the best. Because Mania's, it's got its songs. I'm not really a fan of the newer Fall Out Boy stuff.
I've never been a fan of any Fall Out Boy stuff.
Alice in Chains, their new record. I've listened to, I think, a song from it. I mean, it's an Alice in Chains record. That's the best way to put it. Especially, it's called Rain or Fog. I can look out my window and see the fog on Rainier at the moment. So I want to assume that I would like it if I actually listened to it. I don't know. All these albums are, I mean, yeah, like you said, they're established acts, but
and a Zeppelin like copycat.
And a Zeppelin copycat who was apparently inspired by Aerosmith. Oh God.
Where did they say that? Where did they have the audacity to say that?
There's an interview with Robert Plant. I don't know if you've seen this too, but they say,
yeah, and he says they're Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Like, he shares, like, well, that Zeppelin one.
He's like, and I think he makes a comment, like, and they say they're inspired by Aerosmith, and he rolls his eyes, and I just busted out laughing at that point.
Yeah, because even, like, Zeppelin has to know. Like, I'm certain Page and Plant have, and John Paul Jones have all listened to at least, have had someone play them at least one Greta Van Fleet thing, and they'll all go, well, they're just copying us.
Yeah. But yeah, but this whole thing falls back on like we were talking about earlier. These award shows, I'm sure many other
they're
people
are so safe. Too. It's like literally safe,
and it feels to me it feels pointless.
I mean, it's one of those things where I don't get why they keep happening, and I don't get why even if they were happening, they never seem to quite know who they're awarding things to.
Let's
For the Grammys at least. I mean, if we're gonna focus on the Grammys right now. I had to say, I don't even know who it could go to because, quite frankly, last year, musically, was a blur to me. Everything just meshed into this one gray amorphous blob. You know, there was very little that even McCartney put out an album last year, and I was like, this doesn't even grab me. Like, and let me tell you something. When the last remaining grand talent of the Beatles puts out a new album and I'm unimpressed, you know you've fucked up somewhere. Like, so that's one of those things. Like it just all blended into one. I mean, I've been trying. I went through like all of Rolling Stone's reviews of albums last year and just got anything that got like a 4.5 out of 5 stars. And even some of the people whose work I liked from previous years, like a couple of days ago, I listened to Courtney Barnett's new album from last year. And I was not impressed. I was like, this is really monotonous. You've traded out songwriting for mood pieces. And I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm saying that it doesn't grab me as much. I fell asleep. I like literally fell asleep listening to the album. So, I mean, like, this is the thing. Like, last year was not, I don't know. It didn't grab me. I thought last year, honestly, was like, okay, so we had This Is America kind of came and exploded and then went really fast, honestly. We had Drake kind of squatting over the top of the charts for like a couple months, where literally every song off of his album was like, hey, here's the top of the charts, here's top of the charts, here's top of the charts. And then at the end of the year, we had Ariana Grande come out with Thank You Next, and that seemed to be the jam of the autumn. But, like, all these things have just, like, moved so fast. It's like, okay, well, I can't even keep up with, like, what's relevant. So
here's the hope in 2019 is not as much of a blur, because I agree. There's a lot of music that came out last year, but it's just kind of passed me by. There are good songs in there and good albums and stuff, but I mean, it, just in general, I like to think at the same time that all the oddiers, in my experience, all the oddiers have better albums. 2015 was like one of my favorite years for music. 2017 was pretty rad. I'm hoping this one's about the same, so I guess we'll see.
Well, I hope so. We'll see what happens. It seems to be, yeah, it does seem to be, actually, if now that you mention it, I look back on things. A lot of the best albums do seem to come out in the odd-numbered years.
I don't know why that is.
Like, even historically, like, Sinatra's In the Wee Small Hours, that was 55. The Beatles' first album, Please Please Me, was 63. And even Sgt. Pepper, 67. Abbey Road, 69. Led Zeppelin, 4, yeah. 71. So, I mean, just...
Yeah. Sorry, brain fart.
U2's The Joshua Tree, 1987.
When that came out?
Yep. Nirvana's Nevermind, 91.
So yeah, I think 2019, I don't know. I haven't seen too much in terms of like announcements for albums this year. Like, I don't know who's working on what, but I'm kind of hoping as the year progresses.
I think I literally saw something right before we, and like, again, this is very reflective of my tastes, but I saw something literally a few moments before we started recording that said The Who are going to be putting out a new album this year.
Interesting. Where'd you see that at?
I saw that on Rolling Stone in an exclusive interview they did with Townsend and Daltrey.
Oh,
and
that could be something.
That could be something. It depends on how good the writing is, because Endless Wire was a bit of a mess.
What year was that?
So 06. And that was the last one they put out. So, I mean, like, the thing with me and The Who is that it's more, as nice as Daltrey, I'm certain, is as a person, it's more about where Townsend's head is and where his writing is at. And I think he does his best work when he's working with concepts, but I don't think his material definitely slowed down after the 90s. It was like he put out Psychoderelict in 93 and then no new material until 2006 and now 2019. So he's been slowing down as a creative, but hopefully some new Townsend songs will kick ass once more.
That would be cool to hear.
But here's hoping.
I think if you're talking like classic bands too, part of me thinks that AC/DC has something in the works, because there was rumor a few months ago that they were recording, even though Malcolm Young had passed away.
That can only be. I'm just throwing it out there. I can only see the new AC/DC album if it comes out, and I know people are gonna be upset when I say this. I cannot see it being anything other than a mess.
I see. Well.
Because they've been through so much bad stuff over the past couple of years and lost so many key members that it's like, how can this possibly work?
I think it's going to be a typical AC/DC record. And I say that because apparently for this one, Malcolm Young's parts were already recorded by Malcolm Young for this. So whatever songs they're working with were ones they've been working on for a while. The current members of the band, I guess the only thing they're really missing is Phil Rudd and Cliff Williams, who, you know, Cliff is on bass and Cliff retired. So I guess they'll probably find a new bass player, but Phil Rudd's not in the project as far as I know. And Chris Slate, who is, you know, taken over that role, has been in the band multiple times throughout its history. You know, he's the guy who played drums on Thunderstruck and played that whole album and stuff. So there's a history there. So I'm thinking, like I said, I don't think it's going to be anything phenomenal. It'll definitely be another AC/DC record.
Are they going to have Brian Johnson on it, or is it going to be Axl?
I think Axl is just a tour situation, because the reason Axl's on the tour in the first place was because Brian Johnson, you know, they recommend that he stop touring because of his hearing situation. And So I'm thinking that.
Which seemed odd to me in some sense, because it's like then suddenly you had Axl in the middle of the Guns N' Roses reunion, which people were already jazzed about, then suddenly like, and now I'm fronting AC/DC too. So
yeah, which is just was. Have you seen videos of any of those performances?
No, because I have little. Are they? How are they?
Picture.
Because Axl is not known for being a good live performer. He's known for not showing up or walking off completely.
They definitely got him for the voice, I think, because he's definitely got kind of the similar register of like the high pitched grit of sorts, you know, that Brian Johnson has, or at least had. Yeah, I mean, I can't really explain it. It's Axl Rose singing AC/DC songs, you know. It's worth watching at least once.
So it sounds like the lead singer of Guns N' Roses over top some AC/DC karaoke. That's what you're telling me.
Exactly what it is, actually. Just so right. happy that AC/DC is the karaoke band.
Well, well, well.
Here's hoping 2019 is actually full of good music. That would be nice.
Yes, and here's hoping we can abolish all award shows within the next couple of months.
That would be so nice. I wouldn't have to... Well, I guess I don't worry about it all in the first place, but, you know, I'm tired of seeing it talked about.
I don't know. It seems to me like an archaic process that holds very little relevance to the actual quality of art.
I wish everyone's, you know how like everyone's starting to do like independent like festivals and this sort of thing. There should be independent award shows, you know?
Well, I mean, I think festival awards make more sense to me because then it's like, okay, well, for one thing, you got it screened and it's being screened for a certain kind of audience anyway. The audience who is going to this particular film festival. And then the people who have seen it can all go, well, of all the films we saw at this festival, we liked this one the nicest. And I think that holds more relevance. And then if it goes from festival to festival to festival and more people go, hey, this is good, this is good, this is good, I would judge those on higher quality than I would the award shows where the selections are made by industry people.
Yeah, so I'd much rather, like, of course, not saying industry is not in these bigger film festivals, but, like, I'd much rather see who wins Sundance than who wins, you know, the Golden Globes. Yeah, and that just, to me, the smaller film festivals are more based on, well, sometimes it's based on who's in your movie, but a lot of times those are more based on like the artistic merit of the film itself, which I think is,
yeah,
it's a lot nicer to see those kinds of films.
Yeah, so then say, for example, an Isle of Dogs will win something over a Spider-Man because even though everyone likes Spider-Man, they recognize that Isle of Dogs has the greater artistic relevance. Yeah,
definitely.
What did you think of Bohemian Rhapsody winning Best Drama?
Best Drama?
It won Best Motion Picture for Drama. It was up against Black Panther, which isn't even a drama movie. Black Klansman by Spike Lee, which I also don't think was a drama movie. At least I don't, you know. Yeah, it was like a comedy drama. If Beale Street Could Talk, which I hadn't seen, and Star is Born, which was okay. So
yeah, of all the ones, well, of course, I haven't seen all of them either. I don't know. For what it's worth, like, and we discussed this before, Bohemian Rhapsody is a... Despite the fact it has its issues with plot and that sort of thing, and I guess actual relevance to the truth, Rami Malek's performance is, I think, very, very well in the film. And I think him winning that award was worth it, but overall winning Best Drama, it's a good movie, but there are better films out there.
I think I'll tell you this right now, people were really upset on Twitter for it then meaning another award for Bryan Singer, who is... I guess we just decided, well, let's forget about all the accusations on him. In the middle of the Me Too movement, we suddenly gave a Golden Globe for Bryan Singer, who did not attend the ceremony, surprisingly.
He was also, was he a director?
He's the credited director of the film. He was fired in the middle of it, but he's the credited director.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, I mean, he's getting an award for something that like only has half his work on it. You know, I don't know.
Well, I think it was like I don't know what the story was there. I know he directed the Live Aid sequence, which was easily the best part of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not. All the pictures that I saw of them holding the Bohemian Rhapsody Awards was Rami Malek, whoever the producer of the film was, Graham King,
mm-hmm.
and then the remaining members of Queen and their manager. And I'm like, and the director of the film is nowhere to be found. So
yeah, I think if we're talking movies in the future, of course we can talk about these award shows and stuff like that, but let's pay attention to like South, because South by Southwest is coming up in a couple months, and you know they're going to be screening good movies there. So
oh yeah,
we should pay attention to that circuit and see what's going on there, because I don't pay much money for any films, so...
Yes, maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but maybe in the future we'll get in my good friend Nick Perong, because he has a habit of trying to watch all the Oscar movies before the ceremony comes out, so maybe he'll have some outlook to give.
That would be cool, yeah. I'm down with that.
All right. So, this has been another episode of The Juke Joint. He's been Aaron New, and I've been Jacob Whitmer.
Don't forget you can... Oh, go ahead.
No. Go plug things. Go plug things, because I don't know how to plug things.
Yeah, so show notes. You can find links to our personal pages. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. You can find Jacob's pages on his YouTube and his Twitter. Don't forget to like the podcast in the first place. I guess you can't like it on any platforms. I just kind of kept rolling with that statement because I didn't want to sound stupid. Subscribe to the podcast on your platform of choice. We are available on every service at the moment, except maybe Apple Podcasts, because they're still doing their backlog of holiday submissions. Subscribe to us. Leave a comment telling us what you think of the show. Any feedback is very much appreciated. It helps us make a better show for you all to check out. And yeah, thanks for listening.